Welcome to Breaking Form, a podcast of poetry and culture. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I am James Allen Hall. For those listening for the first time,
we do literary games.
We revisit books that we love.
We gossip.
We do. We interview.
We shade.
We laugh.
And we are not for everyone. Mm-mm. Let me tell you how I came up with today's game that we're going to do.
I cannot wait.
So I was watching Instagram. It's like I was watching PBS and taking notes. No, I was scrolling through Instagram stories and there was this video of like how a mother fox like was communicating with humans because her baby was stuck in branches or something. Aww. So biblical and briars or brambles like mm-hmm. Christ, and basically how like, you know, Lassie, Timmy's stuck in a mine shaft fox. So the man went and he totally undid the fox and rescued it.
Yes.
Yeah, so everyone's like totally like, oh my god, it's so beautiful. So I just got the idea. So I commented, and then a pack of wolves descended on grandpa and ate him. Later that evening, everyone was sitting around excited that their plan had succeeded. And the baby wasn't really a baby. It was a fox named Lou, who'd always seemed small. And now he was excited to be a hero in the fox community. I don't know why I decided to write that on this public forum. I mean, one person's liked it. I'll probably get like hate or something. But it just made me giggle.
Was that on your actual Instagram, like under your name?
I'm afraid it was under Breaking Form.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh my god, I totally endorse that.
But I was going to do it under mine, then I looked like, I think it's Breaking Form.
I do that all the time, especially with gay porn on Twitter. I'm always liking stuff with the no, I'm just kidding.
Well, people are like, Aaron's tastes are really different. They're all about the butt. They're all about giant butts as line breaks. So then I immediately texted you and I said, wouldn't it be fun if we read some poems and then we wrote fan fiction about those particular poems? So like what happened after
they sailed into the sunset.
Exactly. So we both have chosen two that we're going to do of our own.
Yes.
And then we're going to throw one to the other one, which sounds like I'm going to throw one to you. I'm going to catch a finger.
I'm going to catch it with one hand. I'm yes. So good.
Exactly. So then, so we are going to basically write fan fiction about what we think happens continuing from the poem, from the story that we heard. And we'll read the poems, pick short ones. We'll mm-hmm. read the poems because you may not know all of them and you won't get the whole story if we don't.
Yes. Although we've also picked kind of well-known poems too, right?
Sure. But I still think for those listening, they don't have to go like look up the poem again.
No. Do you want to start us off?
Sure. So I was thinking of the poem that we have actually talked about someone here before, Robert Hayden's Those Winter Sundays. So I will read this poem and write some fan fiction after for what I think happens. Sundays too, my father got up early and put his clothes on in the blue-black cold. Then with cracked hands that ached from labor in the weekday weather, made banked fires blaze. No one ever thanked him. I'd wake and hear the cold splintering breaking. When the rooms were warm, he'd call, and slowly I would rise and dress, fearing the chronic angers of that house. Speaking indifferently to him, who had driven out the cold and polished my good shoes as well, what did I know? What did I know of love's austere and lonely offices? And while I do understand how hard my father's life was, and that he would get up on Sundays and do that for the family, I still do hold a little bit of resentment for him and the chronic aches in that house and how he treated me. So I thought I would go work on it in therapy. So So my therapist lets me call her Cindy. Well, that's her name, but it's really Dr. Fairbanks. But Cindy, I said, hey, I'm still mad about the way my father treated me when we were young. He was doing a really nice thing. He was heating up the house, even on Sundays. But I just think, you know, sure, I understood like how lonely that was. But, you know, I had stuff going on, too. So I decided to talk to her. And so she was like, well, you're right. You know, just because you're the understanding of your father doesn't mean that you have to let him treat you poorly. Or, you know, forgiveness is good for you, but it doesn't necessarily mean you'll like be forgiven back. Because my big question to her was like, do I confront him about this? Will that lead to like healing? And she was like, I don't know. And then I love this about her. She always tells like a little bit of a personal story. And she was telling about how she and her husband, it was her husband's mom who actually was terrible to the whole family. And then she left and then she came back and she left again. So they talked about like forgiveness. So two of his sisters were like, I am not forgiving her for that, but he decided to, and he thought the mother would somehow be like, you know, feel bad about it, and she didn't. So then he felt like he gave even more. So, but I decided for peace and for poetry that I was going to confront my father about this.
Oh my God.
So oddly enough, it was a Sunday morning. I'd gotten up and put my suit on. I was going to unnerve him by like agreeing to go to church with him because he doesn't usually think I'm going to go. So I'm like, I'm going to go to church. And he comes downstairs and he's like startled. Guess what? I already had the heat turned on too. I was like, I'm going to take away like the one thing that you all are so proud of doing. Oh, look at me. I turned the heat on. That excuses all the anger in the house. So I asked him about like how chronic the chronic anger in the house. And you know what he said? He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. You were the one with the bad attitude. Gaslighter. Gaslighter. So I told Cindy and she said, I told you that was a possibility. He may not feel anything, but do you feel lighter? What I felt was I was actually able to leave where we were living. And I now currently live in Long Beach, and Long Beach has the perfect weather. You don't need heat or air conditioning year round.
That is amazing. What a great story. Yay. I'm clapping for you. That was wonderful fan fiction.
Thank you.
You are really welcome. So this is fan fiction after not a poet I really know very well, but this poem is sort of iconic. It's I Know a Man by Robert Creeley.
Mm-hmm.
I Know a Man. As I said to my friend, because I'm always talking, John, I said, which was not his name, the darkness surrounds us. What can we do against it? Or else, shall we, and why not, buy a goddamn big car? Drive, he said, for Christ's sake, look out where you're going. And Orson, which was also not John's name, grabbed the wheel, swerved the car so that we wouldn't hit the moose.
Mm-hmm.
We got out of the car so Zephyr, which was also not John's name, could make faces at it like it was a baby, which is how John died.
Oh my God.
I climbed back in the car with the body of my friend Alistair, though his underwear read Fabian. Anyway, I drove all night listening to Celine Dion covers by the Backstreet Boys. I drove down back streets and alleys. I talked to ghosts because I said, I am always talking. I know a man who lives in California, so I drove till I reached Hollywood, and he offered me a job on the spot filming the autobiography of Red, which was, in fact, my friend's name, Robert Red, after he changed it from Scarlett Frank O'Hara. So I drove a stationary bike in front of a green screen. I drove and I drove until I thinned the wheel's tread, the rubber tread, which is just like the thinnest divide between the reality of this poem and the reality of your piss pink life. So there you go. That's the fan fiction for I Know a Man.
And P.S. My name is not Susan.
P.S.
Yeah,
P.S. stands for Piss Pink.
Piss Pink Life. I think we should call it fan fiction, A Piss Pink Life. I really do. All right. So this is a poem by Tess Gallagher called I Stopped Writing the Poem. I stopped writing the poem to fold the clothes. No matter who lives or who dies, I'm still a woman. I'll always have plenty to do. I bring the arms of his shirt together. Nothing can stop our tenderness. I'll get back to the poem. I'll get back to being a woman. But for now, there's a shirt, a giant shirt, in my hands, and somewhere a small girl standing next to her mother, watching to see how it's done. And that little girl's name is Linda. And that day she was like, I fucking hate laundry. Goddamn, fucking hate it. So I'm going to work as hard as I can, and I'm never going to rely on someone who requires me to do laundry. So needless to say, she studied really hard. Science was her best subject. She was really good in algebra too. And I mean, she also could draw, though her mom like didn't love her drawing. She thought they were a little too suggestive. That's just the kind of person she was, you know? So she unafraid, which led her to her next decision to enroll in the FBI Academy. Okay. When she went, I mean, still the same now, there's not a lot of like, you know, room for women. It's still a boys thing. You know, I mean, she would go running, like she'd be up running before everyone. And she would listen to Taylor Swift's Death by a Thousand Cuts, which is kind of odd because the FBI, but then when Midnights came out, she decided she was going to listen to your own kid, which kind of does go back and fit like the moment she had the laundry epiphany. Mm-hmm. Her mother, though, totally supports her in doing this. Like her mother totally supports her in the FBI journey. So she got tapped very young to work on a case of a serial killer who was skinning the skins of women. And they decided like, oh, my God, you know, you're the perfect person. And it's weird because her favorite actress was Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs. So there was even like more parallels. So I know. Can you believe
it? Freaky Friday.
Freaky Friday. So one day after her jog and she'd finished the chorus of You're on Your Own, Kid, you know, and she was like, they were friendship race. Let's take a moment and taste it. Like, that's her favorite part. She got a call that they'd found another body. And what this killer would do is he would fold laundry and leave it on the body. He would fold his shirt and leave it on the body. Brutalized, but would fold the shirt. So she was like, oh my God, this is like sort of full circle, because I'm thinking of when I was watching mom do the laundry, even though I said I was never going to do the laundry. So she was a little bit angry and more motivated to catch this particular killer. So she got to thinking, she's like, you know, I have to pay attention to the whole crime scene. So she's like, let's see, have I ever seen someone fold a shirt like this? It's like somebody had watched a YouTube video and it totally like folded the shirt in a way that saved all kinds of space, like in your suitcase. So you can go for like 2 weeks without having to like take more than one suitcase. So she started thinking like, okay, wonder how I can figure out who this is. So then she got the bright idea. She's going to start looking at the laundromats around town, because she thought perhaps someone who's that invested in folding, you know, and it's so consistent. It's almost always like, you know, 4 inches across, like all that stuff. It's all the same. They measured, like that's how much she wanted to like find this. So she decided to get a younger person in the FBI force, because this man seemed to always target young blonde women. I mean, imagine that, I guess, because America loves it so much. You know, so she got the younger woman, Tanya, who also was a Taylor Swift fan, but more toward folklore and Everlore. You know, she like Evermore, she liked those albums. But she went into the different laundromats and it made so much sense. Like, you totally have to give them like your phone number and your address, and they know how to call you, and they know what they can basically draw you to wherever they want. So she went into several laundromats in the town, and one person, knocked on her door. He said, I'm going to bring this stuff by. I realize we live close together, which is weird, but you know, people fall for stuff like that. My dad like clicked on a link on Amazon telling him he'd get like a free iPad. Did he? No. People fall for stuff like that. So when, of course, she had a squad ready, everyone was there. He came in, the shirt was folded perfectly like that. And right then they descended. You know, they, of course, they had done DNA testing and they realized that he was the one who had killed all of these women and left folded shirts on top of them. So that is Linda's story of success and how poetry was an integral part to her success in solving a serial killing spree, much like Jodie Foster's In Silence of the Lambs, for which she won an Oscar. So did Anthony Hopkins. So did Jonathan Demme, whose speech kind of makes me nervous, and it won Best Picture too.
Yeah. So, oh my God. That is amazing. I cannot believe that's how they caught Robert Pinsky.
Yes. Yes.
Incredible.
Those crisp folded shirts.
The label, the labor, the color, the shade, the shirt, girl.
The pink piss life.
That's what you do. That's the name of the detergent. Piss life. Sometimes what I hate the most about fan fiction is when they just
all of it.
All of it.
Yeah, like, everything. The 50 Shades of Grey of it.
That it's creative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But when they just take the beginning and not the end. So I've done that with an Emily Dickinson poem that we all know, because I could not stop for death. He kindly stopped for me.
Is it like a prequel? Like she was chain smoking, yes. And all of a sudden the poem comes out.
That's
is it a
right.
prequel? Is it a prequel?
Well, not really a prequel.
Okay.
It's just like, you know, explains the motivation for why M gets in this damn carriage.
Okay.
Right.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just really curious about whether we were going prequel or not. Okay.
No. It's just really the motivation behind the character, right? Okay. So it's kind of a prequel. Anyway, because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality. But just kidding, because it also held Linda Gregg, who asked if I wouldn't mind if we could stop by Lee Young Lee's house, since she had a massive bag of dog shit to leave on his doorstep. And she kept flicking a lighter. So I was a little nervous about that. That lighter made me a
She's
little
She's like,
nervous.
The city in which I love you, motherfucker.
Exactly. I'm just a woman asking for directions to how to, terrorize your life. So I waved back through the curtains to my sister Lavinia, who was like the spitting image of Deborah Norville. If Deborah had like a Roman chin or any kind of chin at all, actually. And I yelled back, like, burn those letters. And she yelled back at me, I can't hear you. I guess it was the wind. And I said, let me out of this bitch. Because my sister is going to tell everyone I'm having an affair with my sister-in-law next door. But Death said, now say torture. And Linda said, there are so many traps and many look courageous. Where are we going anyway? I asked. And Death said he was trading in this carriage with its matte black exterior and its cartoon circus bright seats for a goddamn big car. And I said, watch where you're driving, because he almost hit Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is as big as a moose in real life. And she was blocking the whole bitter mess of New England. And so, like, on the way to this car dealership, I saw many sights. I saw Elizabeth Bishop buying her last tampon at the CVS. Ooh, I saw Janine Garofalo on a date with Sylvia Plath, who slurped down 3 dozen oysters on the half shell.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, she libidinous hunger. And then I saw Samuel Taylor Coleridge sucking through a hose the last dregs of fuel from Wordsworth's gas tank. And that may have been a metaphor. And then we got there, and that's the end of the story. I got out. I bought a goddamn big car. And I drove off into the sunset.
I remember we were driving in your car.
And I picked up Thelma and Louise on the way, and we were good to go. We lived happily ever after, all three of us girls.
Flying. The car bounced on the trampoline and flew on. That's what happened.
Aaron, I'm going to ask you, so we can ask each other, right? Okay. Just name like something from poetry, and then we have to decide if it's gay or if it's homophobic.
Okay.
All right. All right. Yes. So rhyme, gay or homophobic?
Homophobic. And oh. I think it's complicated because uh-huh. I think it initially it was gay, but yes. then I think that it started being like cliche stereotypically gay to the point now that it's homophobic.
Oh. That's what I think. Yeah. And see, I was just thinking of like sounds that love each other, like same sounds. And so
you've always been gay. A fucking irritating romantic.
Such a Libra, I know.
Aww. All right. Gay or homophobic, best American poetry.
Homophobic completely.
Why?
There are no fags in there at all.
I've been until Denise.
Yeah, I know.
I'm homophobic, so
no, I think early on, like the only, I mean, who's the gay people in Best America? There are like two, you know what I mean? And they weren't writing about like gay people or gay things, right?
They were just writing about like the wallpaper.
Barry Ammons gay?
No, Archie. That was his name, Archie Ammons.
Oh, he can't be. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's not gay.
Yeah, so that's my answer.
Okay.
I'm sticking to it.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, you can't use best American poetry as lube.
I feel like you're panicking about your answer now. You don't have to tell me. You don't have to tell me. Work that shit out in therapy. I've helped enough students this week.
Oh, my God.
You can ask me. What do you want to know?
Okay, Aaron. Grading. Gay or homophobic?
You know what? I feel like it's gay. You know why? Because it's fucking keeping us down. They're always trying to keep the fucking gays down. I mean, I guess that it's homophobic, but yeah. I don't know. We do it to each other. So
that's so funny.
It's self-loathing. It's like self-loathing. It's internalized homophobia. It's internalized homophobia.
Yeah.
Grading is.
I have another one.
Okay.
So staying quiet while you're being workshopped. Like
you're gonna say fucked. I'm like, that's reality.
Really, you're quiet when you're
Well, yeah. I mean,
because you're like sheltering in place.
I don't want to wake up my parents. But I'm on their floor.
I'm gonna say a line break.
Super gay.
Super gay, right?
Super gay. They totally trouble the norm. Super, super gay.
Yeah, you have no idea what's coming next.
Exactly.
They're the drag queens of poetry.
Okay. Hard copies. Poems.
I love hard copies, so I'm going to say gay too.
Okay.
Because they're old school and they're svelte and they are beautiful objects, and I feel like they're so aesthetic.
So it's like the old days on Fire Island.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, like, like it. I'm feeling it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's your turn.
Oh, it's my turn.
Mm-hmm. You're sitting there like thinking lustily about Fire Island.
It's really, ooh. I was thinking about making a Frank O'Hara buggy joke, but I knew that you would hang up on me.
Well, whatever.
It's homophobic.
Yeah, it's true. You're a homophobe. Yeah,
that's true there too. Spondees.
Well, my initial like association was like they're sort of like Spanx, but not like spanking, like something that like inhibits. So I'm going to say homophobic.
All right.
Well, they do formally. It's like you have to do a certain thing. So you know, and I know it can be argued many ways, but for the game,
homophobic. For the game, homophobic. Got it.
Narrative poems.
I think narrative is the homophobic element in poetry.
Tell me more.
Because everyone wants a straight narrative.
Oh, mic drop.
Welcome to the Fanfic Fact Check.
We don't know if this fact check will be very good because we're getting ready to interview a really great guest, but we're not going to tell you who it is, but it's pretty awesome.
You just think that that's a great guest because of how you've slept together.
I have been really excited about having the author of 50 Shades of Grey on the show, which is how I will lead in to today's FC. Some people probably know this, but E.L. James's 50 Shades of Grey was originally titled Master of the Universe and was posted as Twilight fan fiction on fanfiction.net under the pen name Snow Queen's Ice Dragon in August 2009. And that's from Forbes. And I'd heard that. So since we did a fan fiction episode, that has cracked me up. And I feel confident in saying all of our fan fiction's better than that book.
Oh, 100%. And I quote, in case I didn't attribute it in the show, but in case you were wondering, I quote the last line of Robert Pinsky's The Shirt, which is the label, the labor, the color, the shade, the shirt. And I quoted it perfectly. No mistakes in the show.
Ooh, people love that poem.
I love that poem.
It's like anthologized in the Norton and stuff, in the old Norton, in the Edward Norton.
As it blows. We have talked about the films that have won the big like stratosphere of awards, the five major awards at the Oscars, which are Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Screenplay, and Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And only since, I mean, we're up to date here, only three films have won all five of these major awards.
Okay, I think I know one.
Do it.
The Silence of the Lambs.
Which is what we say in the show. Can you name the other two?
No, I don't know.
It Happened One Night in 1934, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in 1975. And a total of 43 films have been nominated in all five of those award categories, but only three have won all five major awards.
It's like getting a Lammy nomination.
Or not. Hey, everyone. If you enjoyed today's Breaking Form, review us with 5 stars on Apple. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Breaking Form Pod. And we'd love it if you'd support us by buying our books. Links are in the show notes. And remember, we're not for everyone. What a great story. Yay! I'm clapping for you. That was wonderful fan fiction.